Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Well, this is exciting. It's literally called the America First Refinery. First refinery built in the U.S. in over 50 years.
The first new refinery in the U.S. in 50 years will be in Brownsville, Texas. Interior Secretary Doug Burgum.
Latest technology, latest capability, and of course, one of the things that's happened in the last 15 years has been the explosion of the shale revolution, which has transformed the Permian, the Bakken, the Marcellus. It's taken America from being in decline on energy to being the number one oil producer, number one gas producer, number one LNG exporter, and on and on. America literally is the powerhouse of the world right now, and of course, that helps with keeping prices down at home.
When operational, the facility will process approximately 60 million barrels of domestic crude every year.
President Trump's strategy is we've got to get into all the infrastructure, not just the raw production. And that means we've got to be able to refine, do that refining here. And so this is a project that really wouldn't have happened without President Trump. Essentially, we were banning LNG export facilities under President Biden. You couldn't get an approval for a refinery in this country. Now cutting red tape, whether it's across the whole of government on regulations to make sure that we're doing everything we can to protect that clean air, the clean water, and the soil health of America. We do that as part of this administration just because we all care about those things. But we can do both, just like we did back in North Dakota. You can build new infrastructure and take care of the planet. We do it better than anyone.
This comes as annual U.S. crude oil exports fell last year for the first time since 2021. It reflects shifting global demand patterns and changes in domestic utilization. U.S. crude exports averaged about 4 million barrels per day last year, down 3% year over year. Legal and policy developments around paraquat and glyphosate reshaping the outlook for crop protection tools with implications for farm operations, regulatory policy, and input availability. Henry Davenport's an ag economist at Virginia Tech, says recent court and legislative action suggests manufacturers and users may be gaining ground after years of litigation. Federal policy shifts also influencing the outlook. President Trump recently issued an executive order prioritizing glyphosate supply and domestic production amid trade and supply chain concerns. Well, large-scale conservation enrollment reshaping rural economies in ag-dependent regions, raising concerns about community stability. Alongside environmental benefits. John Duff is with Cerro Ag Strategies. He says programs like CRP provide measurable resource gains, but they can alter local economic structures when participation reach sustained scale. His report suggests three responses: evaluate conservation exposure at a community level, prioritize working lands conservation practices, and pair land retirement programs with investments that diversify rural economies and stabilize employment. He says the bottom line is diversification is critical as conservation reshapes rural economies. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The Agriculture Committee has always been forward-looking when it comes to the folks that we represent, the industry that we really serve, the hardworking men and women of agriculture.
Pennsylvania Representative and Chairman of the House Ag Committee, G.T. Thompson.
You know, 2014 Farm Bill, we really did some good things on forestry. Certainly, we started to do some good things on specialty crops. It was a good, really good Farm Bill. And in 2018, when Mike Pennoy took the reins as chairman, we improved on those. And we continue that tradition with this Farm Bill. This probably at this point is the best Farm Bill for specialty crops, for row crops. Because when I talk Farm Bill, I include what we did back in July. You know, increasing those reference prices, investing over $66 billion, the investments in animal health, decreasing the cost of the crop insurance, the conservation rate, adding to the baseline of conservation by 24%. So I think my opinion is that we were always dedicated of building on prior success to achieve new levels of excellence for the American farmer.
This is Thompson's second run at a farm bill after passing one 2 years that never made it to the floor. What's different?
House leadership had mentioned that if I could be successful with getting a bill out of committee, that maybe a markup before Easter. But, I think we're going to get that as soon as the schedule will allow. I don't know if we'll meet the Easter mark or not. We've had some weather delays this past couple weeks here in Washington, which has put us behind. But we need to do a prompt bill. I know that Senator, my good friend, my former Bible study buddy, Senator John Bozeman, is looking forward to us sending this bill over to him. So I think we have plenty of time to get this done. And I think there's an urgency. This needs to be done as soon as possible. You know, this addresses a lot of the issues that our farmers and ranchers have been facing still. Inflation is down, but those inflation the past couple of years have really hurt our farmers. Some market disruptions, input, availability of inputs that they need. I mean, there's workforce. I mean, there's just a lot, and so that's why this is not a bill that we could ill afford to drag out to the end of the year. This is something that we need to get done as soon as possible.
He also had one of his amendments approved.
I had it struck me. I've worked with David Scott. David was the chairman of the committee. He was my ranking member. He's so passionate about the 1890s institution scholarship program, and he was a real champion for it, and so I guess I sort of surprised him last night. I offered an amendment, and that it was the name, the 1890s educational institution scholarship program, after him. And I think that's very appropriate. He's one of three members that have that graduated from 1890 institutions, historically black educational facilities that do great agriculture work. And so definitely took them by surprise when I offered the amendment.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
In February, retail, so think grocery store for at-home consumption, willingness to pay in the retail channel was down for 7 of the 8 categories we tracked. So pretty much across the board, we had some softening in the domestic retail channel, and it was down on all 8 that were away from home, the dinner meal. So we saw some tightening of the wallet in the February numbers is the way to think about that.
Kansas State livestock economist Glenn Tonzer on the February Meat Demand Monitor.
Now, some context is important is we've had a pretty good run. Those kind of month over month and even year over year kind of statements are relative to higher numbers. So I don't think like the sky is fine. Don't overreact to my comments here. But February already had a little bit of a pullback tone to it. And then the developments in the Middle East here early March have probably added to that. If you want a ray of sunshine point to kind of offset that for a moment, before you and I started recording, I made the comment, it's green, it's warm, you know, that's got to make us all smile a little more. Well, that's one step from grilling season, right? So we may be firing the grills up a little bit earlier than we thought, and that is good for meat demand in general. Hopefully that shows up to kind of, you know, reverse trend and save some of the adverse patterns I've alluded to so far. Not consume because I can't change the availability overnight, but the demand, so the willingness to pay, how much they're going to value it and how much they chase those pounds in the market, 100% yes. And the reason I'm making that distinction is consumption versus demand is always important. It's particularly important when we're talking about, you know, long biological cycles, and we don't increase production overnight in any of these industries. But the other part of that would be is the retail channel has been strong. Food service has been weaker, would be a summary statement for probably 18 months now. And potentially that gets magnified here in 2026 if we have an extended grilling season and people continue to go to restaurants a little bit less. Both of those would be shifts towards the retail channel. And your grilling season being a little longer question would be another mechanism for that retail channel to do better. No, I refer to protein values, and I'll take a second to remind us what that is I'm asking folks, and it's over 3,000 people every month, you know, what are the most important things when you make a decision to buy or not buy a meat protein item? Pick 4 that are most, pick the 4 that are least, and the 4 you don't pick are, of course, in the middle. So it's kind of a forced rank exercise. I'm clarifying that because you can't tell me all 12 things are most critically important. We don't learn much when we allow that. And we regularly find taste and freshness lead the decision. Safety and price are like 3rd and 4th, but I want to emphasize taste and freshness are regularly the first two things, like most prevalent on that top 4 list, to be very clear. And that's very advantageous to beef. Anybody that understands the improvement in cattle quality that's happened in the last 20 years, less grading select, more grading upper choice and prime, that's connected to consumer quality. And the market signals that have encouraged all that, we should not, you know, throw out in other discussions. But beef has benefited from that improvement because it aligns with the fact that the U.S. public prioritizes taste. The beef and pork checkoff support this project based at K-State. The protein values question I just alluded to, it is asked in the sense of meat protein. So it is not specific to beef, pork, or chicken. Parts of this project are, some of them aren't. That's the reality of one survey and the budget realities of we don't do everything at the, you know, cut level for sure, much less species level. We continue to be in a we want protein environment, and meat is one of the protein sources benefiting from that. And what you're alluding to here is, again, in MDM, one of the things we always ask is this self-declared diet question. So are you a regular, you know, consumer of animal products, i.e. a meat consumer? Are you a flexitarian? So you're a meat consumer, but periodically have meals you purpose to skip. Are you vegan, vegetarian, or like we give them a none of the above opt-out option? In February of 26, 79% told us, I'm a regular consumer of animal products. And that might sound low, but it's actually a very high number because on top of that, you have an additional, you know, 10% that are flexitarians. Actually, it's more like 11 when you do a random thing. So about 90%, I would call ongoing meat consumers, right? The 90% is probably an underestimate on the prevalence of meat consumption in our country. We are very much a meat consuming country. That's not a new statement, but the date of February drove that home again.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
And when your religion tells you to kill somebody, as far as I'm concerned, it's time to get a new religion.
Louisiana Senator John Kennedy on U.S. involvement in Iran.
Our intelligence clearly showed that Iran had restarted its nuclear weapons program, and its plan was to produce so many missiles, so many ballistic missiles and to some extent cruise missiles and drones. In fact, they were producing between 200 and 600 ballistic missiles a month. Our intelligence showed that their plan was to stockpile so many missiles and so many drones that if we re-entered or anyone re-entered Iran to stop their new efforts to obtain a nuclear warhead, that they would annihilate the entire Middle East and other countries they could reach, like Turkey. So the president, wanting to avoid a future war, said, I've got to intervene now. And here is our mission. I don't care what you've heard. This is what our mission is in Iran. We want to destroy their navy. We want to destroy Iran's air force. We want to destroy Iran's missile production facilities. We want to destroy Iran's drone production facilities. We want to destroy or make them use as many of their missiles as they have and their drones. And we want to attack and destroy the infrastructure used by the Revolutionary Guard. And then we want to get out. If the president puts boots on the ground, the thud you hear will be me face planting from surprise. I will faint.
Also from Louisiana, Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson.
The hostilities and the military operation in Iran is limited in its scope. The president has said as recently as several hours ago that it will be over soon. It's been remarkably successful. I think I saw the number over 5,000 targets struck in that country. The leadership of the country, the regime, has been turned over to a next generation. Who knows how long that will go? But they're holding the people back. They've killed tens of thousands of their own citizens. And importantly for America, the reason this is in America's interest is because they were going to strike us. And they have been at war with us. Iran declared war on us for the last four decades. They said they wanted to wipe Israel off the face of the map, and they wanted to hit us as the great Satan. They've killed American citizens. They have fired upon our service members over there in our installations. Enough. But I think that this current operation was by design limited in scope and in mission. I think the mission is being achieved, is nearly completed, and the commander-in-chief himself said in the last 24 hours, it will come to a close. So gas prices will readjust after that. You know, most of this is because of the Strait of Hormuz has been closed by the regime down there. But it will be reopened, and it will take a couple of weeks, but gas prices will come back down. Remember, they were down almost $2.50 a gallon on a national average under President Trump, when under Biden they were at almost $5 a gallon. So this is a temporary blip in an extraordinary trend of a return to American energy dominance. The evidence speaks for itself, and it will continue to. Olivia.
Comments as energy prices skyrocket on uncertainty. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Both gray wolves and Mexican wolves, the subspecies that a lot of our producers there in the Southwest, Arizona, New Mexico have to deal with, are listed there, as well as grizzlies.
Garrett Edmonds is with the Public Lands Council at NCBA. He talks about how protections exist for predators under the Endangered Species Act, or ESA.
You know, for far too long, our producers have had to shepherd the burden of these listing decisions that often cases, and I hate to say it again, just aren't grounded in reality. We know that these species have recovered. I'll point to the most recent case where Fish and Wildlife Service released the updated estimated population numbers for the Mexican wolf. Recovery goal was 320. The estimated numbers, 319. We know there are more wolves than that. I call on anyone that's going to be seeing this, go and visit Wolves Among Us and look at what they're dealing with on the ground there in Catron County, New Mexico, as well as Arizona. And you can see, based on the depredations that our producers are seeing on the ground, the instances they're running into with wolves, it's recovered. So we await action by the agency. We really want to push them towards a direction to delist there. What we've seen far too often, though, right when we get to these recovery numbers, the goalpost moves once again. And quite frankly, producers can't have the goalpost move. They have put in the work. They have coordinated and worked alongside agency partners, both on the state and the federal level. Now's the time to honor what the science on the ground is. You know, we look at gray wolves, the level of impact that we're seeing in throughout the West, producers just are bearing the brunt here. And once again, a species that we know has recovered, that has been litigated time and time again. We've had five separate attempts to delist the gray wolf, and each time it is litigated in the courts, and the environmental NGOs have their win, and they're able to keep it federally protected, only to hinder the landscape and the producers that are trying to be good stewards of these lands.
But very little can happen unless Congress authorizes and appropriates the spending.
We look at funding for some of the programs that our producers rely on, to name one, making sure services like Wildlife Services is adequately funded. We have a lot of our legacy provisions that we routinely advocate for, one being to not list the sage grouse. We really advocate for that language in appropriations as well. And then when we think about wild horses and burros in the West, we want to make sure that BLM has the funding they need to carry out the management activities that they should be carrying out through the Wild Horse and Burro Program. Appropriation season is a fast-paced moving time. This is when we see everyone. I'm looking out my window here, but it's quite literally when you see everyone come to the Hill to advocate on those key requests and other items that they're looking to move in Congress as well. But you know, it's a midterm year. It's an interesting time where conversations may look a little bit different. We hope that Congress can be successful and actually move some items that we're advocating for, but when you get into these midterm years, you often see one side not want to give the other side any wins ahead of election season. This is a tale as old as time, but I think I heard it best said the other night, there are R's, there are D's, but then there are appropriators, and those are the individuals we need in the room that can have those tough conversations but find that bipartisan compromise that we want to see people strive for.
It's Agriculture Today.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
The most recent data we were able to find in terms of share of patients that were prescribed GLP-1 drugs is from 2024. We see an increase in the share of patients with these diagnoses receiving a prescription for GLP-1s. It's increasing rapidly. We don't have data for 2025, but that is obviously going up.
Talking demand drivers for protein. Chief Economist at USDA, Justin Benavides.
My theory here was that we would look and we would see some net change in food consumption, but the office put together data on snacks sold. So this is billions of units of snack sales on the right-hand side during the same time period. And surprisingly to me, at least, the number of units sold has remained roughly the same. Now, that doesn't account for changes in price to make them more accessible if demand is declining. That doesn't account for all the other varieties of food. It's just this one question of billions of units of snack sales. And I was just surprised to see that when we think about the long-term trend towards GLP-1s, the potential for less food consumption overall, we don't see that being borne out in the data just yet. I will be interested to revisit this question a year from now, 2 years from now, and see if that picture has changed any. But these are certainly patterns that we want to observe when thinking about overall food demand and demand for U.S. products. Secondly, thinking about innovative demand sources, and in particular biofuels, we have the 45Z rule for flexible feedstocks, and then the big ongoing discussion about the RFS and any amendments to the RFS. What I have up here on the screen on the left-hand side is a graph showing expansion of U.S. soybean crush, all based on biofuel demand, a little bit of an exchange in exports and soybean crush, with soybean crush expansion being driven by an increase in demand for domestic biofuel consumption and for biofuel exports. We think about the, on the right-hand side, the use of different feedstocks in U.S. biofuel usage. I would point out that that graph on the right-hand side is not adjusted in the final column for a full year of data. So we would expect to see it at least increase marginally when December data is updated. But we can see that over time, there's been an influence of increasing demand for soybean oil to use in biofuel feedstocks. And this is going to be an incredibly important demand source as we think forward into the next 5, 10, 20 years. Use for beans and corn, obviously, on the side of the ethanol debate for fuel is, we think back to the very beginning of that first graph that I showed, the first big expansion in cost of production as well as prices received on that graph came as a result of RFS2. This is the big question in the room at the moment for expansion and innovative demand. Do we see amendments to the RFS that increase demand for corn? What is that resulting influence on RVOs? What is the influence on the demand for imported biofuel feedstocks? How does the competitiveness evolve? But I do think finalization of 45Z and any changes to the RFS could be some of the major inflection points in the year as we think forward about what could change the price picture. When the World Outlook Board sits down and puts together their season average forecast prices, and they think through what are some of the changes that could influence that over time, I would think two of the major questions would be, what do we see in terms of 45Z and its influence on demand for soybeans, for corn, for canola? And then also, what does the change in the RFS, if any occurs, mean for increased demand for corn?
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.